Welcome to Nourish and Shine, where I talk with passionate leaders in the fields of nutrition, functional and integrative medicine, and wellness, providing inspiration and practical advice to nourish your mind, body, and spirit, optimize your health, and live a whole vibrant life starting now. The Nourish and Shine podcast is provided for educational and informational purposes only, and it is not medical, mental health, or healthcare advice. The information presented here is not intended to diagnose, treat, heal, cure, or prevent any illness, medical condition, or mental or emotional condition. Please make sure you consult with a trusted healthcare professional before you make any changes. Welcome to Nourish and Shine. I'm back after a few months of rest and we're recording again. So I'm going to be putting out monthly episodes. I'm so excited to have Amy Galliper here with me today. She is here to talk about clean beauty and aromatherapy. You can check out her full bio on our show notes. Welcome, Amy.
Well, thank you, Amy. I love that we have the same name, which is so amazing. Yeah. I'm really thrilled to be here and super excited to talk about essential oils, aromatherapy, what clean beauty is, all that good stuff, my favorite topic.
So. Yeah, all the good things. And I'm taking Amy's course right now and it's so much fun. And that's being part of the course. I just knew I wanted to have her on the podcast. So thank you for saying yes. And I'd love for you just to kind of start off telling everyone about yourself and kind of how you got into aromatherapy.
Okay. So I have been teaching aromatherapy and about essential oils since 2013 in New York City. I've been in the wellness space since the late 90s. And I'll just give you a little background. So I would say sometime in the early to mid 90s, I actually had like a bit of a healing crisis where I had a very kind of mysterious autoimmune disease kind of show up. And it really forced me at that moment in my life to re-examine all sorts of things that were going on in my life, like both my relationships, my food, my living environment, like so many things. And in that like place of, I guess, discovery, as I was learning about myself and learning about, you know, this condition that I had mysteriously appeared, it really put me into a space of real introspection and self-reflection. And then that kind of led me to mind-body medicine. And back in the mid-90s, that was still a very new concept. I mean, I've been living in New York City for most of my life. And, you know, in the early 90s, they were like, if you can imagine, maybe like 5 yoga studios or something like that. Like, it just wasn't something that people were doing, you know, and Whole Foods didn't exist, hadn't come to the city. It was like a very different world. So finding out about this information was definitely much more experiential and who you knew and where you would go. And I just started to investigate a lot of different practices from acupuncture to Tai Chi to Reiki to Shiatsu to all sorts of different things. And I got really involved in Shiatsu, loved it, really connected with it. For those of you who don't know what Shiatsu is, it's like acupuncture and it uses finger pressure instead of needles to stimulate the chi or the flow of energy in the body. And I was really taken with that practice. And then as I was studying and I ended up getting trained to be a teacher, I was like really into it. A friend of mine turned me on to essential oils. And the minute I smelled an oil, I had this like incredible aha moment where I was like, oh my gosh, this experience is like the quintessential mind-body experience. Like through one sniff, one application, I was suddenly feeling both a physiological shift and a mindset shift and an emotional shift like simultaneously. And when that happened, I started integrating essential oils into my shiatsu practice. That then soon evolved into me developing a product line in the early 2000s. And I launched a brand in 2003 called Buddha Nose, which was all about mind-body medicine. It was about less is more, whole plant ingredients. I was really kind of fixated on this, what I called at the time, conscious beauty, like what we put on our skin has a big effect on the environment and on our well-being. And then since I was one of the early brands, that then catapulted me into kind of advising other brands. So I became a consultant and a teacher. And then that just kind of naturally led into me opening up the New York Institute of Aromatherapy in New York City in 2013. I opened, and it was the first school, believe it or not, that was a professional level aromatherapy certification program. And I also taught formulation techniques for like natural beauty formulation. I mean, up until then, New York never had a place like that. It was kind of amazing that it didn't exist in New York. So I opened the doors in 2013. It grew like crazy. And ended up hiring all sorts of teachers and had all, you know, it was really kind of booming school. We had thousands of students come into the program. And then, and then COVID hit, had to shut down the school, pivot. And so now I'm doing all of my classes and teachings and sharing all of my content online. So that's kind of the story.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, and I've written also 2 books. I forgot to mention that.
Good. Well, that's the next question I actually wanted to ask you, but you've had such an amazing journey. And I think it really speaks to the depth of knowledge that you bring to teaching as well. And I definitely experienced that as a student. But I wanted to talk about your first book, the Plant Powered Beauty book. Last night, actually, I was reading it in preparation for this, and we've been reading it and referring to it for the course, but it is such a good book. I've read a ton of different like kind of plant beauty type books, but I really feel like it's so straightforward, and it also teaches you like more of the methodology than just to follow recipes, which is really cool. But what drove you to write that book, or what inspired you to write it?
Well, you know, I will say it all goes to my co-author. I co-authored the book with Christina Denio. Mm-hmm. And she was one of my first students at my school, the New York Institute of Aromatherapy. And she is a book agent, which I did not know at the time. And a year or two after she graduated and got her certification, she approached me and said, "Hey, I'm working with a publisher. They want to do a book on plant-based beauty and they need an expert. And I thought of you." And that's kind of how the book happened. So I am eternally grateful to my student, Christina, for offering this incredible opportunity. And we brought on as co-authors to kind of see this through. And she has the most remarkable style sense and photography and design and being able to, like, as you said, like put it into a format of being straightforward and articulated. So we were the perfect pair because I just brain dumped all of my recipes and all of my ingredient knowledge that I had gathered over the last almost 20 years. And she, in this most miraculous way, organized it into a book and matched beautiful photographs that we took with it. And she really manifested it for sure. So that was really how the book came to be. And it was just so exciting to see my recipes that I had been doing now for so many years. Because when I was speaking before, when I went through that health crisis, like part of it also was I felt this urge. I don't know if anyone has ever felt this way when you have a healing crisis, that you feel kind of this lack of control over your own wellness and your well-being. And in order to kind of navigate that, I started taking back, like started to become, I would say, very self-sufficient. I was like, I need shampoo. I'm going to make it. I'm going to do this. I'm going to make it, right? That I started to kind of take back my, it made me feel grounded to be able to like make things and do it. And it was also paralleling with my food. Like, I'm going to bake bread. I'm going to do that. Like, I started this whole like self-sufficiency thing during those early, I would say late 90s and into the 2000s. And that's kind of what then started me making product, especially out of food, out of like what was in my kitchen. So the genesis really started then. And then just years of like working on it and all of that, it kind of evolved. But yeah, that's how the book started.
So. I love that. And I love that story. And it just, especially talking about like getting into making your own food plus your own beauty products, I think that's where a lot of us are now, especially when you're trying to avoid all the things that can be added. And, you know, a big word for me is nourish. And I think, you know, of nourishing from the inside as well as the outside. And I'm sure we'll dive more into that. But as far as like clean beauty goes, I know that's a term that's kind of thrown around, or maybe people aren't even familiar with it, but how do you really define it? Or like, what are some of the things that make something clean? And then also, what are some of the other words that are out there that maybe you like or don't like that people should be aware of?
Okay, for sure. So I've been involved in this wellness space and like plant-based, I guess, natural beauty now since 2003. So I have seen a huge, almost dictionary of words trying to describe this quote movement and what was first identified as a trend, but now is very quickly becoming mainstream. And it started out as natural beauty. It started out as green beauty, eco-conscious, organic beauty, right? Non-toxic beauty, toxic-free beauty, right? All these words were like swirling around. And what was happening is that the natural word started to lose less and less I would say validity in a way, because to describe something as 100% natural was becoming like much more complicated and difficult to actually really prove. And so this was then forcing marketers and formulators to find other words to describe what they're using, like plant-based, or maybe it's green, or maybe it's eco-conscious, or it's non-toxic, or those kinds of things started to emerge since natural was becoming more watered down and wishy-washy, right? Then I would say in about 2013, around the same time that I started my school, 2012, Credo Beauty, I don't know if anybody knows of this online retailer, and they also have physical retail stores throughout the United States, credobeauty.com. They had this vision back, I would say in like 2012, maybe 11, 12, 13, somewhere around there. And I connected with them. And I've been very fortunate to work closely with them and be a supporter of them and helping them in the very, very beginning to kind of articulate, were they going to be natural beauty? Were they going to be green beauty? Like, what was all that meaning? And I think that's where the word clean started to emerge. Now, I am still involved very much with Credo Beauty. And if you go to my website, actually, there is a free course called Clean Beauty 101, which maybe we'll put that in the show notes so people can go click over and get some really great information. But that free mini course is all about what clean beauty is. And what's so cool about what Credo is doing is they've taken all of those years of that confusion of language, and they have really truly defined what clean beauty is. And they have actually put together standards for the industry. And now these standards are becoming like so well respected. Cosmetic chemists, contract manufacturers, new beauty formulators are all following their standards. And their standards of clean basically means that clean you have to see as almost like this moving kind of Venn diagram, which is the way Mia Davis, who's the director of Mission, likes to describe it. And it's this intersection, not only of using ingredients that are plant-derived and plant-based, right? Minimally processed, but also has this whole other component, like, what about the packaging that these products are in? How are they clean? How are they sustainable? What is the ethos and the values of the companies that are creating these products? Do they have a company culture that gives back, that is environmentally conscious, that is working towards wellness, that is contributing in a larger way? So these idea of clean is not just defining, okay, clean meaning other beauty is dirty. It's not that linear. It's not that simple. Clean is really about transparency, communication, community, sustainability, clarity, and understanding and communicating to the consumer what it is that they're getting. And so it kind of ripples out in so many ways. So that's why I really feel that clean beauty is really here to stay as the word, so much more, in a much more impactful way than words like natural or plant-based or botanical or anything else. Because now clean is expanding as we're expanding. It's moving as we're moving. It really is kind of a living term. And I really love the way that Mia has kind of, I would say, pioneered and articulated this mission for Credo, and they've done a tremendous job. So
that's incredible.
Yeah.
I love your description of that, because I didn't realize the depth of clean beauty and the meaning behind it. And then I think too, just being able to clarify that some of the terms maybe aren't quite as meaningful anymore is helpful, because there is a lot of marketing that goes on and a lot of
confusion. Oh, 100%.
Yeah. When it comes to clean beauty, one of the things I learned recently was about the skin microbiome and how what we're putting on our skin can actually disrupt the skin microbiome. And we focus so much, I think, on like the GI, the gastrointestinal microbiome. Can you speak to why the skin microbiome is important and how we can not disrupt it, or like what we're doing to disrupt it and then how not to?
Right. So our skin microbiome is you have to think of it as kind of part of our immune system in a way that we develop as we grow up and age. And basically it is this kind of massive colony, I guess you could call, of, you know, hundreds of thousands of different microorganisms that kind of live on the surface of our skin and are there primarily to help protect us from, you know, the pathogens and other microorganisms that are swirling around our environment that could cause us harm or make us sick. So it is part of our immune system in that way. And our, I guess you would say the ecology, so to speak, of our skin is really important for our overall health and well-being. It helps maintain and support our skin barrier function, which makes sure that we, you know, retain enough water, excrete what we need to excrete, protects us from pathogens coming into our body. It helps with maintaining kind of the durability, I guess you could say, of our skin, making it, I mean, think about it, our skin is exposed, right? It's dealing with so much in the environment, from pollutants to sun damage to, you know, microscopic things flying around to clothing that we wear that make contact with our skin. So our skin is constantly in response and reaction to the environment, and the microbiome is really important in helping that. So when you look at the skin, actually, there's two things going on. There's our acid mantle, which is there as well, which kind of helps maintain the pH of our skin. And then on top of that, we have these microorganisms that are living there that are also there to kind of help protect. And they mix with our sweat and our sebum, which is our natural oils. And it all is, there is this like incredible, like I said, ecosystem that kind of helps protect us. And now the issue is that when we over cleanse, or we even have, you know, rough clothing that's constantly rubbing, or we have contact with something like a pollutant or a chemical or something that causes irritation, the microbiome and our natural pH level has a hard time like navigating that. And sometimes it just breaks down. It can't respond anymore against it. And when that happens, it exposes our skin to more sensitivity, right? It doesn't have that like thin film of protection. So I think where we're seeing with skincare products and what they're noticing with the increase in dermatitis issues coming up and adverse different skin reactions, rashes, whatever it might be, is that they're finding that it has something to do really more with the disruption of our microbiome on our skin and the destabilization of our pH on our skin, rather than it has to do with maybe the ingredients being so terrible, right? And that whatever we put on our skin, whether it's synthetic or natural, it needs to kind of be in alignment with our microbiome so it doesn't cause us a reaction. So I think what we're noticing, and it's not too different than what we're doing with our gut microbiome, right? It's like kind of the same concept. We don't want to disrupt that kind of ecosystem. So we eat foods, whether it's, you know, obviously we want whole foods and not synthetic, but maybe it's a more processed food, but we want to just know, okay, what's that disruption? What can we do to help bring it back, you know, bring it back to balance? So it's really this kind of intricate play of balance on our skin to help our body navigate the environment that we're constantly dealing with. So I know there's a big trend within the skincare, especially within the clean space, of actually adding like prebiotics, probiotics to actually the formulation to kind of help feed back whatever we might have scrubbed off or rubbed off to kind of help recolonize our skin so it can feel more protected and resilient.
Oh, that's so interesting. And so what effect does like the soap you're using have? I know we talked a little bit about like Castile soap in our course, Castile soap versus like regular, like a glycerin soap or whatever, like a more synthetic soap. Mm-hmm. What sort of soap actually helps? Is there a soap that helps? Kind of.
Well, I think when we're talking about cleansing, the most important thing to think about is the pH, where it is on the pH scale, right? So I'm sure if you know a little bit about nutrition, right? We know that we want to eat a very alkaline rich diet, right? And so it's going to be like up on the scale of like 7 to 10 or 11 or 14 even, right? More alkaline. And we want to shy away from acidic foods, right? Which are down on the scale, 1, 2, 3. So skincare and skin acidity, I guess you would say, it operates on the same scale, right? That, you know, you have acidic and you have alkaline. Well, our skin actually does not like alkaline, okay? It's opposite of our gut. Our skin actually prefers to be a little more acidic. So soap, like Castile soaps and other soaps, tend to be very alkaline. And when they are way over on the alkaline, they strip and disrupt that microbiome. Okay. So if you're formulating a soap, you want to bring in ingredients that are going to lower the pointer from the alkaline and bring it more towards the acidic, resting somewhere between 4 and 7, ideally. So the skin is not disrupted. And so that's pretty much what's going on. So soap is perfectly fine. And I mean, we've been using soap like since the beginning of time, right? To cleanse ourselves. But the issue is you want it within the proper range. Okay. And often you might be saying, okay, oh my God, how am I going to find that out? So the best thing is usually soaps that have like other fatty oils or things like, you know, rich oils in it, like avocado oil or coconut oil or coming from those kinds of things, are often layering back the elements that are going to bring it back to more of an acidic place. So you want to definitely look for soaps that are more nourishing, not as stripping, right? For that kind of thing. There is a synthetic surfactant, which is like the foaming agent called, which I'm sure everybody's aware of, sodium lauryl sulfate, right? And that is shown to be very alkaline and can be very stripping to the skin. And that's why people have sometimes a really bad reaction, like skin irritation, because it's just too much on that end. Okay. So if we can bring things down to the other end, we're going to have a much better experience with soap.
That's so interesting and good to know. Are there any soaps like that come to mind off the top of your head that kind of meet that criteria that are like widely available?
I mean, I think that, you know, creamy cleansers that you can find at Credo, any of them work really well. There's a company that I really like called Osmia. I think that's how you say it. Osmia. She's a soap maker and her soaps are really nice and good for the skin microbiome. There's a brand, Marie Veronique. It's also sold to Credo, but she sells a lot of other places. She has a lot of products that are very specific towards the microbiome and, you know, for balancing it. And then there's another company called Mother Dirt, and they have an excellent soap that's really good to support the skin microbiome. So the issue really is just trying to bring those foaming agents, whether they're plant derived or not, just trying to move their arrow away from the alkaline and more towards the acidic. And a good formulator will understand what plant-based ingredients they can bring in to help do that.
Oh, I love that. That's such good advice. Thank you. So when it comes to starting out with clean beauty, I know a lot of people may feel really overwhelmed because there's all sorts of things we might use, from lotions to face creams or whatever. Where do you recommend people start? Like if they're just new to this and like, okay, what's like the one most important thing or two or three most important things you could start with?
I would say soaps is a good place to start. I think they're the least expensive to kind of swap out. I would say a cleanser, you know, try a body cleanser, a facial cleanser. I would just start with that first. And I would then go to, maybe some face oils or a face moisturizer or a body moisturizer, whether it's a cream, a lotion, a butter, an oil. I think that would be another step that could be really good. And then I think another really easy one is like lip care, like lip balms, lip scrubs, those kinds of things. I think we get a little more complicated when we're looking at color cosmetics, hair. That's going to get a little more complicated. One thing that Credo is offering is they actually have a place on their website where they offer a clean beauty swap. It's a free service where you can book like a Zoom, you know, consultation with one of their team members and actually discuss like what you have and what would be a good product to first try and swap out. So that might be a fun thing for people to check out, because I think they're offering a great service with that. But I would definitely say I would start with a cleanser. Deodorants are also good. Sometimes that's a little hard to let go of what you're used to using, but I think that there are amazing plant-based clean deodorants out there now that are really working and are wonderful.
Yes, so, I think I have a little bit of PTSD. I finally found a clean deodorant that I really like. But as someone who's been kind of in this space for a long time too. I feel like I was a deodorant connoisseur for quite a while. You try so many different ones and they'll cause irritation or burning or they
right.
work. Can you speak to that a little bit and like, what maybe do you look for? And at least for me personally, and maybe if you could share if this is for others as well, I felt like it took a couple of weeks almost to adjust to going off of like a very commercial deodorant to a more clean deodorant before I was like balanced out and not feeling smelly. Can you speak to that?
100%. And I think you bring a really good point in that I think when you do these swaps, whether it's a deodorant or a cleanser or anything else, it's going to take a while. It's not this an immediate swap out, okay? Your skin regenerates about every 28 to 30 something days. So your skin is getting used to a new way. You have to think of it like food, right? So let's say, I know for me, because I try and follow the autoimmune protocol diet. And if I can't really be that strict with that, like I'm definitely paleo, but I know when I first started, right, it took like a month of like getting used to the taste of the foods, getting like understanding like what I was craving and letting go of, like it took an adjustment period, right? And anyone who has tried to go from like, you know, a regular kind of meat American diet and going vegetarian or vegan, you know that, right? It takes a transition. Our skin needs that same transition time. So to kind of get used to the ingredients, to understand what it is that they're kind of absorbing and all of that kind of thing. So as far as deodorants goes, what I would look for is I would try to avoid any natural or clean beauty deodorants that have baking soda. That tends to be very irritating to our skin. So you may want to look at other types of absorbing powders like arrowroot, tapioca starch, corn starch, other kinds of powders like that, clays that help absorb odor, that are soothing to the skin, but don't cause irritation. So that would be one thing. If you're very, very sensitive, definitely stay away from baking soda. I would also make sure that, you know, I'm a big essential oil fan. That's why I'm pausing because I don't want you to think. I think essential oils are, I mean, I've built my whole career on essential oils, but under the arm, it can be irritating. Yeah. So I think that you need to just be a little careful with that. There are certain essential oils that are more irritating than others, like peppermint is super irritating. I probably would never buy a clean beauty deodorant that has peppermint in it because I know my own armpit and I know it would not be happy. It would be like too intense. So I think knowing a little bit, you know, trying to go for essential oils that you may not think, you know, have this like deodorizing, like you think peppermint, oh yeah, masks an odor or whatever, but that might be a little strong for your underarm. So, you know, looking for things like chamomile or lavender or citruses, those are going to be like much more gentle and not as irritating. I've seen some really nice ones with rosemary, but that can be tricky because that can also be slightly irritating. And same with tea tree because it can be very drying. So you may just want to kind of look around and know your own skin and kind of suss that out a bit. But I would say those would be two things to look for. I also think the ones that are more cream-based that might feel weird, it's like you're rubbing a lotion on your armpit or a cream, tend to work better than the sprays that might just be water or alcohol, might have some alcohol in it, which might be very drying. I have seen some interesting gel-based ones, which are very nice because they're quick drying and gels are fast penetrating. So you may want to look at that for something that's cooling and non-irritating. So I would look for those.
That's great advice. And I too agree with kind of more of a lotion feel. I feel like, or it's more of like a cream, I guess, that I use, or a clay. Mm-hmm. But it does, it goes on a little more like what you would expect from the other products anyway. So it was a pretty close swap. The other thing I wanted to ask you about too is with lotions. I've had the experience recently using a lotion that was more of like a water-based lotion that it felt like it was drying out my skin more than adding moisture. Can you speak to that? Is that something we should watch for, or how does that work?
It's, I have to be honest, it's hard for me to talk on it without seeing the ingredient deck, because it may not be the water. It might be another ingredient in there. Because water generally is not drying really.
Okay.
But you definitely want to make sure that the water is paired with an ingredient like what's called a humectant that helps bring in and hold the water. Mm-hmm. So I would have to kind of really look at it to get a better idea of what's in it. It might be other ingredients that are causing the drying and maybe not so much the water. Like I make my own face creams, and it has about 10, well, I make a huge batch, but the batch I make has about 10 ounces when I make it of water or waters. And it should feel like, I don't want to say wet, but it has that feeling like you've really just like let the skin drink, you know what I mean? And then the oil part of the lotion like seals it in. So it should give almost that dewy feel, and it shouldn't feel drying. So there must be another ingredient in there. You could just send me an email and I'll look and I could tell you maybe by looking at it, but I have not found that the water ones are super drying.
Okay. You know? Good. Well, that's, I've heard actually mixed things kind of in popular.
Yeah. It could be a different ingredient in there, you know? Okay. But I'd be curious.
Yeah.
To see what's there.
And you mentioned your own skincare routine, and you have beautiful skin. And that's for people who are only listening to audio, you're missing how nice your skin is. But can you speak to a little bit of your own skincare routine? And I know you said you make a lot of things yourself, but.
Yeah, I pretty much make everything, though. I got turned on to an amazing face scrub from Audacité. I don't know if anyone knows that brand. Mm-hmm. It's really lovely. But generally speaking, I make all my own products. So what do? Being menopausal, my skin has totally changed, and it's super, super dry all the time. So I tend not to use a lot of soap. Like in the morning, I'll just use warm water and just splash my face and pat it dry, and then add an oil or a cream. In the evening, I've been really turned on by this Audacité face scrub. But basically what it is, I mean, I was making a similar product myself, is I do gentle exfoliations using primarily oat flour as my base, and then layering in other kind of herbal powders or matcha tea or other ingredients, and then adding maybe like one drop of an essential oil, dampening it into a paste with just some regular water, and using that as a facial scrub. So it's not really a soap, but I feel like it's like scrubbing whatever from my day. If I'm wearing a little bit of makeup, I am wearing a little blush right now and a little cover up. I will use a little bit of a soap, but I like those soaps that I described, like that I know have a lot of, that aren't very alkaline, that are more like creamy cleansers. So it doesn't give me a tight feeling. So when I make those by, you know, on my own, you know, they'll have ingredients like, some, you know, I have some simple recipes in Plant Power Beauty, like it'll be a base of a little bit of Castile soap or something like that. But then I'll add in like avocado oil or something else to help make it a little more nourishing. I also really like oil cleansers, which I do sometimes, which is just using straight olive oil, maybe with an essential oil or another ingredient. And what I do, my system is I have like a hydrosol and I spray a cotton pad like three times and damp it. And then I pump like one or two pumps of my oil cleanser. And then I use that to wipe off like my makeup or anything off my face. And then I splash warm water and then I apply, but I'm big on oiling. Like I do tons of face oils all the time. I'm constantly oiling up my skin. This winter, I started to do more face creams because I felt like the oil wasn't providing the hydration, the water that I needed. So I was doing more face cream that I made myself. But oils, I think, are the best things for the skin.
What are your favorite, like top two oils for the skin, like on the face?
On the face. And these are carrier oils. These aren't essential oils.
Right.
I would say jojoba oil. I know it feels very ordinary. Everyone is using it. I do know of one person who has an allergy. So I'm going to give you three choices just in case there's someone who has an allergy to jojoba oil. But jojoba oil, I think, is amazing. It matches our own chemistry of our own oils that we produce on our skin. It's anti-inflammatory, it's skin soothing, it's healing, it protects the skin barrier function. And then I think going for a nutrient-rich oil, something like pumpkin seed or avocado oil or carrot seed oil or something that's kind of nutrient dense, like, is really good. And then if you're feeling like jojoba, like you have an allergy, which I only know of one person in all my years that I've ever used it, but I think apricot kernel oil is a really great alternative. It doesn't feel greasy, so it doesn't feel like you're greasing up your face. Actually, all those oils have a more, I would say, medium to fast absorption, so you don't feel like you have a lot of oil sitting on the top of your face. So those would be my picks.
Great. Oh, I love that. So let's get into essential oils now. And I know that's an area you're super passionate about. So first, I wanted to kind of start with just, what are like your top five oils? If you had to like pick five and you're stranded on a desert island, what would be?
Oh my gosh. Okay, so I'm on a desert island. I can't really get essential oils. These are gonna help me as I'm in survivor mode, okay?
Okay.
So lavender, mm-hmm. rosemary, eucalyptus, tea tree, and geranium. I think Ooh. Those would be my go-to because I would be in survivor mode and I would need those to be used in all sorts of ways. But if you're asking me for, okay, what am I just like totally loving and using all the time to manage my anxiety, because I'm a pretty high strung person. So I'm always making anti-anxiety blends. I actually just made a really nice little roll-on with Cape chamomile, yarrow, and clary sage, which is like super sedating. So those were really nice. But yeah, they change every week for me, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's awesome. So one of the things, speaking of multiple essential oils too, is that you have a really unique blending technique that you teach in your mm-hmm. course. And I've enjoyed learning about it because I never really understood how people come up with blends. Can you speak a little bit to that and how you bring intuition into that as well?
Well, I think blending, it's funny because I brought it up today in our student question answer today, is I think that when aromatherapy students, when you're just learning about blending, you get so fixated on the therapeutics and the symptoms that you're relieving, like, oh my God, peppermint, it's pain relieving, it's like anti-inflammatory, blah, 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 that we kind of let go of what it smells like. Like we kind of think of that as like secondary, and we're just like aiming for the medicinal, right, of what it can do. But I want to flip the script and say that really we need to think about the aroma first, because if we're not creating blends that are beautiful and we're not creating blends that people are just loving to smell, no one's going to be using aromatherapy. What's the point? Okay. They might as well just pop an Advil. Like they don't like the smell. Why would they ever use it? So when we can engage and develop our sense of smell, we connect with our intuition, because it's all connected to that part of our psycho-spiritual intuitive part of ourselves, which we all have. And by smelling something, it taps immediately into our unconscious, and connecting to that piece can help guide us in what we choose. Now, being a really good blender, however, you also need to know the science, you need to know the chemistry, you need to know all of these other things. So it's a really nuanced kind of combination of both the intuition and the aroma and the olfactory experience with understanding the medicinal and the chemistry. And so my framework, the blend solution framework, really is trying to teach people these really simple steps to try to engage both parts of that.
Oh, I love that. And it is, it's wonderful. And I love bringing in the intuitive piece, because that's something I work with around like food, like, and like thinking about, you know, intuitive eating, but then to think about intuition with blending. And I like how you talked about kind of the doctrine of signatures and thinking about the properties of the plant and how they grow. And I think it's such a neat technique, and it also helps me kind of relate to the plants better. I don't know if that's mm-hmm. the best way to say it, but.
100%, because I think ultimately it's all about relationships.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, and that's one of the principles that I talk about as far in my framework, is that we really have to develop not only our own relationship to ourselves, our relationship to our client, our relationship to the oil, our relationship to the plant, the plant's relationships with each other. You know, I mean, you could just like ripple it out. And so I think that's a really important component.
Yeah. So when it comes to essential oil safety, that's an area that I get a little bit passionate about as a pharmacist. We get a lot of questions, but what would be your top safety tips, and what are maybe some ways you see people maybe going wrong that you would like to set straight?
Well, I would say number one, do not ingest them.
Thank you.
Say number one, they are meant to be smelled. They're aromatic components. Their focus is about aroma. If you wanted to eat the plant, we would go with an herbalist who knows all of these powerful ways to create and compound the plant material into applications that we can take internally, okay? So number one, I would not ingest them. I would never ingest them by putting a drop in a glass of water. That is a huge no-no. And I know a lot of people do this, but the reason is, we were just talking about the delicacy of our microbiome, is the chemical properties, I guess, the physical properties of the molecules that make up essential oils, their personality, their structure, right, is very drying and very irritating to mucous membranes and those elements that line our digestive tract, okay? I mean, if anyone has ever accidentally tasted an essential oil, your mouth, no matter what it is, lavender, which is so gentle, no matter what it is, it's going to feel like you're burning something in your mouth. Imagine what that feels and does all the way down. Chances are also when you're drinking that essential oil, it's going to get more focused in this upper part by the time it even gets down there. Though I do know people who have been drinking oils like that in water and have really disrupted their gut microbiome. So I would definitely never do that. I think it's not a good practice, and I think can ultimately lead to some real health concerns. Number two, I would say if you do not have very minimal education on essential oils, do not apply them directly to your skin. Okay. Keep direct application of essential oils away from your face. Never put an essential oil directly anywhere on your face. Avoid your eyes, your nose, your mouth, avoid all of that. And then also, I would say my last tip is that if you're experimenting blending things and putting them in like, you know, a carrier oil, like jojoba or sunflower oil, always go for as few drops as possible. You can always increase, but it's really hard to decrease. So what I mean by that is that if, let's say, you want to make a quick massage oil for the back of your neck or your lower back, you would take a tablespoon of like olive oil or sunflower oil, whatever oil you have, and only put maybe like 5 drops of your essential oil in there, or maybe even less, maybe just start with 3. Don't go above 5 and see how that feels. All right. And just start with low and you can build up to higher. But those would be my 3 tips is don't ingest, don't apply directly to the skin. And if you are using them on your skin, use them at low dilutions in a carrier oil.
Oh, I love those tips. And that's, I think of the potential for drug interactions too with essential oils, as well as herb interactions. And yeah, it just concerns me. So I'm so glad you said that. So getting towards the end of the interview, one of the questions I ask every guest is, what does the word nourish mean to you?
And nourish to me means, connecting with self and feeling rooted and in relationship with others. And I also find nourish to be a very positive and uplifting word. And so I think it's something about offering positivity, and I also find it a word that also means support. So that's why I feel like it's a word about relationship to yourself, to others, to really to do that. We use nourish in that way, right? We nourish relationships, we nourish our physical body, we nourish our spiritual body, right? There's that relationship with that. So.
Oh, I love that. And what's one thing you do consistently for self-care?
I'm always applying essential oils, I guess, is what I'm doing. For self-care, I would say 2 things. Move my body. I go for long walks. I think movement is massive. If I don't do a good walk, I feel it energetically, physically, everywhere. And then I'm always smelling things. Literally like at my desk right now, I don't, cause I set up this whole thing, but I usually have like a little collection of oils, and I'm just, even as I'm working, I'm just smelling them. So I'm constantly smelling things. So I think that is a huge thing for my self-care, movement and smelling.
I think that's so awesome. And that's one thing that I talked with Farmer Tony in one of my earlier episodes from Sacred Blossom Farm. And he talked about how as a farmer, he tastes what he's growing and smells it like all season long and notices like the variations throughout the season. And ever since then, I have been like tasting and smelling, and like, I feel like there's something to be said for like, just that appreciation and like taking that like mindful moment just to like pause and like smell and just think about what you're smelling. So yeah.
Oh, 100%, you know? And I think it's also really important for our health.
Yeah.
It triggers a lot of important activity in our brain.
All right. Well, where can our listeners find you online? And if you could tell us a little more about the course as well.
Oh, sure. You can find me on Instagram at Amy Galper. You can also find me on my website at amygalper.com. amygalper.com. And I have an aromatherapy certification program called Aromatherapy in Action. And it is a 100 plus hour certification course And it teaches you all about 24, 25 essential oils and, you know, their aromatherapeutic uses, a little history, blending techniques. As Amy said, recipes, there's all sorts of stuff jam-packed in there. It's primarily video-based with a lot of kind of coaching support from me. And I also have a course on my Plant Power Beauty class, which is also on my website. And that course really, not so much, I would say, like teaching about the therapeutics. It's really just like a kind of a cooking show, like demonstrating how to make the recipes in the book. So it's a lot of fun. Yeah, so that's really where you can find me. And for those of you who are interested in getting certified and becoming an aromatherapist, I am opening up the course for enrollment again, in about a month to 6 weeks. So make sure if you visit my website, you sign up for the wait list and you'll be notified as soon as it opens.
Oh, I love that. And I highly recommend the course for anyone thinking about it. I've learned so much. So
thank you, Amy.
Thank you so much for listening to the Nourish and Shine podcast. I'll be back next month with another amazing guest. If you enjoyed this podcast, please make sure to leave me a ratings or review on your favorite podcast listening platform. Also, check out my website. It's amysapola.com, where I offer one-on-one packages, online courses, and group classes. I'd love to connect with you on social media as well. You can find me on Instagram and Facebook. Until next time, may you be nourished and well. The Nourish and Shine podcast is provided for educational and informational purposes only, and it is not medical, mental health, or healthcare advice. The information presented here is not intended to diagnose, treat, heal, cure, or prevent any illness, medical condition, or mental or emotional condition. Please make sure you consult with a trusted healthcare professional before you make any changes.